Welcome to the Reset Podcast, a program dedicated to exploring how we can reset after the pandemic and learn how to live happier, healthier lives as we age. I'm Beverly Morrison Green. In the last episode, we learned how to mind and unwind, how mindfulness and spirituality can actually improve our health. Today, I'll be talking with Dr. Sharia Robinson Lane, a University of Michigan researcher who told me she loves doing research that supports older adults. She's been helping me figure out how we can improve our health and well-being by connecting with others. But first, I talked to Reverend Sheila Cook, a retired pastor who told me about how the people in her Detroit retirement home were affected when the pandemic hit.
In our building, we had a lot of activities. Mm-hmm. Once the pandemic started, we had none. Mm-hmm. Literally none. Anything that we had been doing, they stopped. Mm-hmm. Even to the food delivery from Focus Hope. For instance, they stopped that. They stopped the lunches that would happen there that people could go down and have lunch. So it was different, and it was difficult from the standpoint that they didn't want you to go over to anybody else's apartment.
Right.
And I think we're supposed to be connected with each other. So when we can't be connected, it leaves something off.
The pandemic definitely left something off in our lives, but I wondered, now that we're moving forward, why are some of us still finding it so hard to reconnect with our friends and family? Well, Sharia Robinson Lane helped me understand some of those challenges many of us are still facing.
Well, people are social beings. You know, from the time that we come into the world until the time that we leave the world, there's a need for us to be around and connected to other people. It's such an important part of our wellness. It's a part of our spirituality. We worship oftentimes in groups. And so the pandemic really made that challenging for a lot of individuals and really pushed us to think more about the ways in which we could stay, you know, connected, particularly with the loss of life, you know, during the pandemic and where many of us thought we would be able to reconnect later. Having that opportunity taken, you know, due to death has made a significant difference. And so as we start thinking about what this new normal is, we also have to be a lot more thoughtful about how can we begin to reconnect with one another.
I'm glad you said new normal, because I hear people often say when we get back to normal.
Yeah.
And I don't think that that will ever happen again, because we cannot, definitely cannot repeat history.
Right.
And certainly can't correct the wrongs. What also is impactful is you talked about people who passed away. I had a good friend who had sarcoidosis. Mm. And she had been sick for many years. And she was in and out of the hospital several times. Mm-hmm. But it was when she was not able to see her family.
Yeah.
Because of the pandemic, they wouldn't let people in the hospital rooms, that she ended up passing away. Mm-hmm. And I really feel that if someone had been there to encourage and inspire her, to touch her even,
mm-hmm.
I think that probably, I think she may have made it through.
Yeah.
So from a health standpoint, we know that it's important for people to have connections with people when they are sick, when they're alone, when they're not able to get out and about. And we know that a lot of seniors aren't able to move around as they had in the past. Can you elaborate on that?
Certainly the loneliness and isolation can play a role in your physical health and mental health. So, I mean, like, it can lead to depression and depressive feelings, which can make it more challenging to be physically active, to be socially active, to be engaged. Individuals that are starting to have challenges with their memory and thinking, it can make all of those symptoms significantly worse from the depression. And if you have pain, and you're trying to get your pain managed effectively, that can also play a toll of, you know, the depression of not doing the things that can improve your pain outside of just, you know, taking medicine, like being able to be more physically active and to be thoughtful about your other health conditions.
Mm-hmm. Things have been so crazy the last couple of years, and so many lives just upended. Many of the old folks that I know are now alone, and so many of them have had to downsize from their homes that they've been living in for years. It's just so hard to adjust to a new environment in our later years. And so I asked Sharia what folks can do to feel less isolated and lonely, even when they have to make this kind of change.
Well, I think that being connected with individuals and finding support always makes a difference in both our physical and in our mental health. And one of the things that is very scary for folks is being in a new, you know, environment, yeah. Whether it's, you know, having to downsize and go to an apartment. And so thinking about having to lose some things that were really important to you.
Yes.
There's a lot of memories in, you know, our home, and maybe you had to leave because some of the folks that you might have been able to rely upon are no longer able to support you in the way that you might need. But I think that many individuals have found that moving into new communities provides opportunities for new relationships. And that's something that doesn't get talked about enough. You know, when I talk with a lot of older adults, one of the things that kind of comes up sometimes is about making new friends, because we don't really talk about making new friends as we get older.
Yeah.
We kind of have our old ones, and as those people might, you know, no longer be a part of our lives for one reason or another, we really haven't had to consider what it means to be a friend and make a new friend we did in our younger years. And so we have to give a little bit of thought and attention to that. And I think a big part of that is being open to new relationships, which means we might have to let our guard down a little bit. You still got to be safe and be thoughtful, but it means being open to new relationships. And one of the very cool, nice, interesting, fun things about being a part of a new community is all of this stuff that's happening.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you've spent your entire life catering and taking care of and looking after other people.
Yes.
Now, maybe you don't have to worry about cooking.
Yes.
Somebody else is doing all the cooking.
Right,
maybe you don't have to worry about worrying about laundry.
Right.
Somebody else is taking care of, you know, the laundry. Now you don't have to think about activities. There's stuff that's regularly happening where you can choose to join or choose not to join. And I think this really makes a huge difference for quality of life. One of the things that I found when I've spent some time doing research, for example, in an older adult housing unit, me coming in as a younger person, you would have assumed it would be kind of boring in there. But after like being there, you would be surprised at how much activity actually took place there just sitting there. Like I would have never imagined, but it was like jumping.
Yes.
You know, there was group church services and Bible study, and there was a choir that met and art activities. Like there was so many things happening.
Yes.
And when I spoke with the people that were there about like why were they choosing to congregate in this sort of spaces, they were like, because this was important to them.
Yes.
They like coming and being able to play cards together.
Yes.
Or being able to have opportunities to earn a little bit of income by like making coffee or snacks and selling goods or teaching people a new skill.
Mm-hmm.
And so it really was not the sort of dreary place that many of us tend to associate with places that are designed to support older folks and their new needs.
And that's everything that you just said is what I felt for my mom, and that was to take her out of her home where she only had a one person or two people that would come in to visit with her, her caregivers, and I was one of those, obviously. And so my thought was get her in an environment where people are excited about life, excited about living with the different activities. And so I did that. And it was through a respite program.
Yeah.
It was supposed to be 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And then she says, well, okay, I'll stay another week.
Okay, I'll stay the rest of the month. Okay, and so it ended up where she was there for a good 6.5 months.
Wow.
The issue at hand is exactly what you said, and that is when we are in a different environment around new people. My mom grew up with 13 siblings.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So needless to say, they're very, very close.
Mm-hmm.
But as time would have, people were passing away in her family.
Yeah.
So it was important for her to reestablish relationships with people mm-hmm. outside of her family, I felt. And she did. She, in the mornings, would sit with a group of women and have breakfast mm-hmm. and in a different group during lunch and a different group during dinner. And they had vocalists come in and they had instrumentalists come in and they had quilting, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw her come back to life. Because her being in her home was not giving her that energy from other people. So exactly what you said. Now, what evidence is there, whether specific or anecdotal, that being in regular contact with people actually improves our health?
If we want to look across the lifespan, there's evidence. So think about young babies, and maybe you've heard of failure to thrive syndrome, in which a young child, baby that has not been had the opportunity to be snuggled and loved on and cuddled, you know, just doesn't do well physically, emotionally, you know, mentally, and they don't grow in the way that they're supposed mm-hmm. to. And if they're able to survive this, some babies actually die from, even though you're feeding them and you're doing all of the other stuff, mm-hmm. that lack of physical comfort and affection,
right.
which just really prevents them from being able to grow in the way that one would expect. And we can see the same thing with older adults, where they also have a failure to thrive syndrome. Interaction actually can improve cognition of individuals. So being able to talk and engage and communicate with individuals can make a difference with, as we talked a little bit before, feelings of depression or depressive symptoms in individuals, how we are able to feel connected and feel meaning and purpose in life. And we don't get that in solitary necessarily.
I agree with Sharia, but you know, sometimes I just need some time to myself. And I know folks who are like, well, introverts, who seem to want to just be by themselves. Is that a bad thing? Are there ways these folks can comfortably find connection too?
Sure. I think one thing that's important to note is that there is a difference between being isolated and being lonely, that mm-hmm. a lot of individuals may not necessarily like being around a lot of folks. And sometimes I think we may presume that, you know, older adults, that's one of the myths that are out there, is that, you know, the older that we get, the more likely it is that we're lonely and have this need to be more so around individuals. But just like we have different personalities and you have people who are introverted and prefer to kind of keep to themselves in their own space, mm-hmm. that doesn't necessarily change as we get older. And so I think that there's something to be said about being able to hold space by oneself. I think that there's nothing wrong with that. But I think that there's lots of different ways to stay connected with individuals. Sometimes that might mean we have to jump outside of our comfort zone and learn a little bit of technology. There's lots of ways to do that. My in-laws, who are in their, you know, mid-80s, have learned how to use their iPhones more effectively. So even though they've had them for a long time and they still can't, you know, like a picture on Facebook quite yet, they have figured out how to do a video call through Facebook. And okay. we'll call to video chat with the grandbaby or do things like that. So there are ways to move outside of our comfort zone a little bit, engage some technology, and find new ways of staying connected. And it might mean utilizing some of these young people in your life to get you set up.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you have them get the iPad for you or set your phone up to make it easy to where you just have to, you know, hit the button or put the person's name in so mm-hmm. that you can call and connect with them. And old school always is good. Send an old-fashioned letter.
Yes.
People love getting letters yes. and notes and cards in the mail, whether they're older or very young people, especially young folks. They love getting mail.
Yeah.
And I love getting mail that's not a bill or, you know,
yeah,
whether it's
too,
the spam mail that they send.
Right.
Now. Right. So I think it's okay to go back to some of these other types of ways of connecting to individuals. And you may be surprised at the types of, you know, the response that you might get.
I do love that you mentioned writing. I mm-hmm. have a 97-year-old aunt. Mm-hmm. In California. She loves mail. And mm-hmm. she says all the time, send me pictures. I'm like, I can probably just send them to you. No, send me pictures. And don't type the letter. Write it. She has specific things that she's looking for us to do in terms of communication. Mm-hmm. She sends stacks and stacks of articles. She'll cut articles
yeah.
out and she'll send those. And that's her way of keeping you know, in touch with her family. However, technology, she doesn't want really anything much to do with it. So what exactly can we do then when you have a person that's maybe fearful of the technology?
Well, I think, well, for one thing, I think it's fantastic in the way that she's staying active and engaged, like the whole process of being able to comb through a newspaper or a magazine and find the articles, the fine motor skills of cutting the stuff out mm-hmm. and sticking it. Like, she's working a whole lot mm-hmm. of stuff
oh,
in that
good.
Whole process
yeah. Yeah.
of communicating in the way that she is. But I think one of the things that makes a large difference is walking somebody through it and sitting with them to do it. So, for example, I could talk forever with my mother-in-law about how easy it is for her to do Facebook Messenger and call us on the phone. And she recently did it when I literally sat next to her on the phone with both of our phones, made her do it while I was sitting there. She didn't want to do it then either. I said, nope, we want to see you. Baby wants to see
oh,
you when
good.
She's calling. And so then she did it and saw how easy it is. And now she like does it pretty regularly. So it was just a matter of like someone physically sitting next to her, doing it with her to show her how easy it was, allowing her to do it on her own. So, you know, you teach one, show do one,
yeah.
show one,
yeah,
do
right,
one.
Yeah, I like that. Okay.
Yeah. Then it made it a lot easier for her. So I think that that helps people to navigate some of these spaces. And also people don't know what they're missing. Nowadays, even more things are available virtually. A lot of church services have gone virtual.
Yeah.
So if that's something that maybe you miss, you may have an opportunity to join a virtual service somewhere. And you're not limited by location anymore. So
that's
maybe
true.
You wanted to go and see a service in Mississippi mm-hmm. or Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not like before where you actually had to travel there. Now you just travel via your computer
right.
and can feel a part of the community that you used to perhaps be a part of.
Church has been such an important place for our community to connect. But now that many of us are going back to church in person, I wondered if we'll ever be able to connect again like we used to. Reverend Sheila is still very active in her church, and she talked to me about how services there have changed. So you're back in service now for the most part?
Yep, mm-hmm. we're back in service, encouraged to...
Social distance still.
Social distance.
Yeah, right.
Encouraged to get your shot,
mm-hmm.
get your booster,
mm-hmm.
and anything else.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell people, I said, here's an arm, have at it.
Have you seen that there's a difference in the way people interact in church since the pandemic? We're just now starting to come together again. We're masked. We're, you know, social distancing and all of that. But have you found that there's a difference in the way people are in service now?
Yes. Less hugs. And we are a hugging church.
Mm-hmm.
Every now and then somebody will just say, I need to get a hug. I've had my shots. I've had my boosters.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm feeling fine. Do you mind? And if, you know, if the person is okay with it, then they're okay with it. And if they're not, they say they'd rather not,
mm-hmm.
you know, and they respect that. So that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the way people are handling it is very good.
So have you seen an increase maybe in people who participate online during service? In other words, Are there fewer people in the services worshiping and maybe more people online worshiping? Have you noticed that?
It's been back and forth.
Okay.
Now, what I have noticed is that we have people from all over the country that have been doing online.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's even better because now you're connecting with more people.
I really believe that we need to constantly be mindful of the fact that people need to stay in touch with each other. They need to stay connected. And if they don't have the ways and the means, those of us that do have need to be on task with helping them connect.
You know what surprised me? Reverend Sheila told me about how her prayer group, even though they're older, actually uses technology to pray with those who can't make it to services due to poor health or because they live too far away. They do Zoom, phone calls, but I wanted to know, was it really effective in helping them to connect?
Well, I have seen that it does impact people. Right now, I have some friends that live in different parts of the country that are dealing with some serious health challenges. One of them was already on dialysis, and then she got a diagnosis of cancer. So she's going through chemo. So I stay in touch with her, you know, and she's always upbeat by the time we finish talking, by the time we finish praying. If she happens to call me and I'm on the phone with one of my local prayer partners, I will ask her, would you like for me to hook us all up? I've learned how to do more than I ever thought I'd learn how to do with this phone.
Yeah, that's true.
So I'll do a conference call and shut up. Let them talk.
Mm-hmm.
Let them pray. And by the time it's done, you can feel the energy.
Mm-hmm.
And you can feel how not just one of them, but both of them
mm-hmm.
have connected and, you know, feel better as a result of it.
I know from personal experience that sometimes disconnection from others can be an indication of deeper problems. I know that I went through a very severe time of depression. I mean, I remember reading somewhere that during the pandemic, cases of depression and anxiety surged, and many are still struggling today. So I asked Sharia, how can we help if we think our friends or someone in our family might be dealing with depression? Or how can we find support if we ourselves are feeling depressed?
Yeah, so when individuals are feeling depressed, one of the things in particular that makes a difference for older adults is feeling a sense of connection and having meaning and purpose in life. Mm-hmm. Something as simple as being intentional about engaging the person can make a difference. Mm-hmm. And so we've got to be careful. You don't want to be irritating or bothersome,
right.
you
right.
know, to somebody or patronizing to that individual.
Right.
But it's okay to be intentional about speaking and telling them good morning and actually taking the time to ask how, you know, they're doing today and telling them something about yourself, you know, so that maybe they feel more connected and perhaps you feel more connected to that individual and being thoughtful about engaging them in this way, inviting them to be a part of things that they might be able to participate in, mm-hmm. particularly if it's something that doesn't involve like a ton of activity. So maybe there's a group that's doing something and maybe they can come and sit and watch, or there's something they can participate in. Those are all ways to maybe get somebody outside of this feeling of being isolated
mm-hmm.
And not having anybody that maybe cares about them.
Mm-hmm.
So those small things, I think, can make a difference. I think that it's also important, particularly with older adults, and especially with older adults that come from Black and Latino and Indigenous and other minoritized backgrounds, to talk with them about mental health services. It's one of the things that I think has a lot of stigma, you know, behind it, mm-hmm. And particularly within the Black community, this idea that you can pray it away.
Yes.
And I think that it's so important to be open about the fact that we can have a reason for being depressed. Like we can go experience grief. That's normal. But what's not normal is to continue to feel as though you don't have a place in the world and to not be able to reintegrate yourself back into society, so to speak. That's not normal. Grief doesn't go away. You can be grieving for years or up until the time that you die, maybe. But you can find a place where grief has a space in your living. And so when you lose that living part, that's where we need to get some additional help and support. And I think we have to be more open about these sorts of conversations and understanding that it's not always medication, because sometimes that's a deterrent for individuals. There's this idea that you have to take a pill, which, you know, it's not quite that simple either.
That's true.
You know, but being able to have those sorts of conversations and building relationships where we can have those sorts of conversations are important.
I think you read my mind, because I was going to go there next from a spiritual and cultural standpoint. You know, I find that we pray it away. And if you're not praying, you know, if your prayer is not being answered, you're not being delivered, you're not, you're still depressed, you're doing something wrong.
Exactly.
And that is not the case many times.
Yeah. So another way of looking at professional support is just another way of connecting with somebody that's actually been trained to be able to help you, versus relying upon somebody that's just a good listener.
Yes.
Because it's one thing for somebody to hear you, but it's something else for somebody that can hear you and help you to work through whatever it is that you're dealing with.
Right.
And if people haven't experienced what a joy that might be, to be able to work through something challenging, and the excitement that can come from being able, in a sense of accomplishment, that can come from being able to work through something that perhaps you've been dealing with for a long time.
Yes.
And that sat with you for a long time can be so significant.
Now, just want to revisit the culture conversation. And that is, we know we, people of color, Black people in particular, we love to get together and eat. Oh my gosh, you know, Sunday dinner at Big Mama's house or such and such's house, and this is where we really come together, and we sit and we eat and we have a good time and we taste, and, you know, this is mama's sweet potato pie and so on and so forth, and someone passing that recipe. That is all important to us. How do we continue that even through the new normal that we have right now?
Well, I think that one thing is important is we have got to stop holding on to these recipes, please. Like, because you know how we do. You want to give you most of the recipe and leave out some of the main part, and then you got to figure it out. Let's pass the recipes along, train some of the younger folks to be able to, you know, make some of these things. But I think that even in spaces where we aren't as comfortable continuing to congregate, you can still make things and drop it off. You can still send those recipes. You can still, I mean, people aren't comfortable all the time with like the virtual gatherings, but a lot of folks are doing the virtual gatherings where we might have like a shared something that we all make and we have the same thing at home. Or I've even seen individuals that are in close proximity to one another all still split up different parts of the meals and then drop it and pick up, you know, plates at a particular place. And then we might eat virtually or get on the phone, you know, together. So there's lots of ways.
Well, this does taste like grandma's.
Yeah, there's still ways to share in a lot of that. And you can also continue the tradition. You know, I'm a long way from home, and I certainly miss going to my grandma's house on Sunday and having the ridiculous spread. You know, of food. And I've recently been reading a book that a large part of the book, because that's such a big part of the culture, is the food. It often talks about the mom and like making greens and, you know, macaroni and cheese. And I just, they talked about it so much that, like, you know, this Sunday I ended up making a big spread with greens, because it just, the more I read about it, the more I missed that,
right.
You know? So I think that we can maintain some of these traditions, so my kids won't know what it's like to grow up at Big Ma's house, or, you know, but they may still have the experience of sitting together on Sunday as a family and having a large spread, even if it's just our small group.
We have a whole Reset Podcast episode on eating well that I hope you'll listen to if you haven't already. These conversations with Sharia and Reverend Sheila help to remind me not just how many different ways we can make connections with others, but also the fact that, as Reverend Sheila pointed out, there's really nothing in life that matters more.
It would be wonderful if people would understand how important that human connection really is and just value it. I don't know what the Mega Millions is, but the Powerball is over $600 million.
Mm-hmm.
And people have put a lot of value into that.
With that money, you still weren't able to socialize, so it doesn't matter how much money you have.
That's what money cannot buy, that human connection.
I can't help but wonder sometimes if the pandemic was a way to get us to wake up to how much we really need each other, how much we need to socialize, to talk, how much we really need to hug. I, for one, am going to be more mindful of staying connected with family and friends, whether that's in person or on the phone or online. And you know, I'm also going to be better about taking notice of anyone who might need someone to reach out to them. Hopefully, in this way, we can support each other on the way to healthier and happier lives. You've been listening to the Reset Podcast. I hope you'll join us next time for our sixth and final episode, when we explore a more holistic way for you to get the healthcare you need. We'll also be recapping what we've learned throughout this podcast series. I'm Beverly Morrison Green. Thanks for joining us on this journey towards better health.